Welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show with Nancy Hopkins and Walt Silva, produced by Colleen Kelly of Haggy Shack Radio, simulcasted over Cosmic Reality Radio. And welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show. It is October 30th, 2018. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Walt Silva. This is being produced by Cosmic Reality Radio and maybe over Haggy Shack Radio. I'm not sure what's happening today. Hi, Walt. How are you?
Hello, Nancy. Good evening, everyone, for joining us tonight.
Happy Halloween.
Happy pre-Halloween.
Well, do they come out on tonight at your place, or do they come out tomorrow night, the trick-or-treaters?
I hope they never come out, as if it's up to me.
Do you turn off your lights and not let anybody in and no candy?
I close up my window, shut off the lights, and I don't have a single decoration, so I don't want to attract any flies. Nothing. Go to those houses that are full of decorations. If they're advertising, that means they're giving away candy.
Now, this is not something that you grew up with in Argentina.
No, even though here's the insanity of the internet for you. They are celebrating, in this modern times, they're celebrating Halloween. And you explained to me the Spanish conquistadors brought in their ships the custom of, no, it was brought over by the English settlers, not by the Spanish. They don't have... I know in Mexico they have that thing, the Day of the Dead, but that has nothing to do, that's local to them. Halloween is what you see in the Anglo-Saxon world. There's no such thing in Spain, so it didn't come from Spain. So you tell me, what insanity is this? Celebrating stuff that is not even original to them. The beauty of the internet.
Well, I mean, actually, my understanding of Halloween is that Well, there's two things that stick in my mind. One is the Catholic All Saints Day, I think they call it, which I think is the...
Well, isn't it supposed to be All Hallows Eve? That's where the word comes from?
Well, but I think it's the 31st, is All Saints... It's some kind of a thing to commemorate dead people. I don't quite have a handle on exactly what it is. So when I was growing up as a Catholic, Halloween had something to do with that, with, you know, that sort of thing. But then over, you know, time, I realized that, no, it's probably a Celtic connection. Hold on one second. I forgot to unplug the fish tank. Hold on.
Oh, right. Okay. So Nancy went to... What did you guys hear? Was it to turn off the fire and the fish tank?
No, the fish tank. No, the fish tank. The fish tank pump. I realized I hadn't turned it off. And it gives noise. You know, I wouldn't want to have anything interfere with my lovely voice.
Well, that mic of yours is great because all you hear is your voice.
Well,
that microphone you bought is great for it.
What are you doing? You're making a lot of noise here.
I'm just lowering the blinds.
Oh. Oh, see, my house sits so back from the street, and it's not quite as bad because of the storm, but it used to be so jungly, you never saw the house. Nobody would even think of, plus I locked the door, I locked the gate. So, you know, I mean, I've never had anybody come to the house. But it was a big thing in my mom's day. And I'll tell you why. Okay. So my understanding is that the Celtic, people had, it was like a end of the harvesting time frame, you know, getting prepared for the winter, giving thanks for, you know, the harvest and all of that. But it got this weird other thing that was connected to it, or at least the same time frame. I'm trying to think of what they call this. I used to know these words.
Oh, you mean Samhain?
Yes. Okay, and what it comes down to, I mean, if any of these things that we have these celebrations for, there's all this paraphernalia that comes with it, but what's the core of what they were after, you know? And it didn't make too much sense to me because, I mean, the whole thing is pretty idiotic that you have all these scary dead people walking around and monsters and, you know, but this was even integral to the Celtic celebration or purging or whatever it is. But it only made sense to me when somebody who was talking about Celtic time, this time frame in this holiday season, said that it was a Celtic belief. If you didn't go insane at least once a year, you would go insane during the year. And so a lot of the shenanigans that goes, you know, it's almost like releasing all of this pent-up energy that if you don't release it, it makes you go crazy.
You're describing an episode of the old Star Trek series.
Of the what?
You're describing an episode of the old Star Trek series, The Return of the Archons. It was called The Red Hour. It happened once a year.
How do you remember these things?
When Landru would release control of the people and everybody would go crazy because all the entire year the computer had been controlling everybody's thoughts. So everybody went through life like a robot. So once a year the Landru would release them and they would go crazy. It was called the Red Hour.
Interesting.
I'm not telling sci-fi. You're telling sci-fi.
Interesting. Well, yeah, well, it's interesting because they always seem to have these movies that explain everything, no matter how outrageous it is. But what I'm getting to here is that my mother was had 10 kids, and her favorite holiday was Halloween, and she would. Actually, we didn't have money, and at that time, you really didn't go out and buy a costume in a store. That wasn't what happened. I mean, they did have these made-up costumes, but a lot of it was homemade stuff, you know, because nobody had any money. And so Mom would get into these really, well, like I was a bunny rabbit for many Halloweens. And it was such a good costume that I used to wear it and wear it when costume thingies, even though I wore the same thing for at least three or four till I outgrew it. And then it went to the next person, you know, in line. But the local priest, and I mean, some of the irony of these stories, the local priest, young guy, who turned out to be gay, left the civilian aspect of the Catholic Church and became a chaplain in the Navy. And I didn't find out until maybe 15 years ago that he died not too long after he had joined the Navy, and my father said that he thought it was AIDS. You know, that it's, but it had something, you know, it was one of those very weird stories. But
can I pause you for a question on that? Because
sure.
I've been wanting to ask you this, but since this lady was, I never know when you're going to invite this lady. It was a question, and there is no logical answer on the internet, so it was something that you would have to ask. You had a lady guest, I think it was Celia, the one who explained unequivocally that there's no such thing as the AIDS virus, that the whole thing was a horrible, horrible project where they faked results and they faked laboratory things. And the whole thing was made in such a way that... But the thing that I don't understand is her explanation was nothing but logical. There was nothing outrageous or crazy about her explanation, everything made sense. So my question would be, when they say that somebody has died of AIDS, why? Is it because the treatment that they were given for the supposed non-existent AIDS virus is what brought about their death? Or was it like a placebo death? They were so convinced they had AIDS, they actually killed themselves unknowingly.
No, my it was Celia. What's her last name? I can't think of
Farber.
Celia
Farber. Wasn't it Celia Farber?
Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, she did an expose that got her into a lot of trouble over it. Because, and if I'm remembering correctly, it was the AIDS virus itself apparently was never isolated and identified. And forgive me, Celia, if I get this wrong. I hope I get at least the gist of it. The virus itself has never been actually isolated. What was made the markers of AIDS were certain chemical environments in the body. So they would see these markers for AIDS, supposed AIDS, you know, AIDS virus, but they never got to the virus itself. So what the contention was that it was actually what they were doing to supposedly kill this virus that was killing them.
Oh, so it was the so-called treatment.
The treatment, yeah. Well, why did you get into that? Oh, because I made
I always wondered about that when they say, okay, this person needed a little bit. Well, her explanation was so logical that I never even questioned it. She made a very, to me, an ironclad case that there is no such thing. So, you know, what's killing these people? Is it that they're like so, because the placebo effect works both ways, you know. You can take something that you think it's a medicine and it helps you, or you can take something that you are convinced it's poison and you'll end up dead or close to dead. So I'm thinking, what is it that actually ended these people's lives if there's no provable, or like you said, never been isolated virus for this thing?
I was down here in Miami when And because I worked in the restaurant environment, and you get off at like 2 o'clock in the morning, a large number of restaurant kind of people, and a lot of them gay men, went to a place called Uncle Charlie's, and it was the first disco outside of Studio 56, I think they called it, in New York, and the community of gay people, because they were really ostracized, it was not a pleasant time to be even then, and this was be 76 time frame. The New York 56 club, some of the people that were involved in that, I can't remember the guy's last name, his first name was Charlie, he came down to Miami and set this disco club kind of like the 56 studio down here. And so we would go there after hours, after 2 o'clock, and interface with they were so friendly, they were so nice, they were so much fun. There was straight and gay, but it was a gay basically club. I mean, that's what it was. And we had so much fun with these people, and a lot of these gay guys became friends of mine. And then after about not very long, probably a year, 18 months of you know, this kind of community, because time was longer then, they all decided to go to San Francisco. I mean, I'm talking about every gay man that I knew suddenly decided to go to San Francisco. And I also got out of the job I was in and I ended up in the condominium and stuff, so my life was taking me away from that environment, too. But then, it wasn't very long. Again, I don't think it was 2 years. I think it was more like, again, a year, 18 months. I got a call from one of these guys, and he was pretty upset because they all pretty much kept in touch with each other. You know, it was like a group of them deciding to do this. and they were all dying. I never got another call from him. I think he died too. So when it first hit Walt, it was very, very viral. And it was, I mean, if you got the prognosis of it, you know, that was it. You were dead. And sometime after that, I'm not exactly sure, I read an expose. And it was one of those that, so many times I'll get a piece of information that I swear I'm not sure that it existed at all, but that I had it at one point to tell me something that isn't known. Because I've never seen it, I've never seen any kind of information duplicating that, what they said. But what they said was that this whole concept of the AIDS virus was actually genetically engineered. And this article that I was reading actually the scientist who had developed the virus itself. And it was developed with the concept of develop the virus that will kill, but make sure that there's an antidote in case it takes off. Okay? And so they supposedly had the antidote when they actually also had the AIDS virus. Then they went after the gay community, and they had a photo of the page in one of the newspapers. It seems to me like it wasn't a California paper, but it might have been. But it was saying that if you, what's the name of it? I think it's hepatitis C. It's one of the hepatitises that the gay community was continually fighting. And so these advertisements went out in the newspapers, local and national newspapers, asking gay men to come in and get an inoculation that would prevent them from getting...
Talk about a royal bear trap.
Oh, I mean, that they would... get this inoculation against the hepatitis. And in fact, that's where they were injecting the AIDS virus into that population. And I don't know if it's true, but it rang true at the time, because there was a whole backstory as to why. Why would you go after that community? And it was sort of like initially a way of watching this virus, of kind of like seeing where it could go, how many would it kill, what would it cost to kill them, you know, this type of thing. And it was a direct response to the fear of overpopulation. And the story went back and talked about the concept of birth control. And the Catholic Church, I don't know about the other religions, but the Catholic Church basically forbade the women of Catholicism to attempt birth control, except don't do it or pull out before you come. I mean, that was a birth control. And then all of a sudden you get this real push for birth control. And I mean, right now we know that Planned Parenthood was originally established with the name the Negro Solution.
Wasn't it the Negro Project?
Yeah, Negro Project. And they built these facilities in black neighborhoods to not only promote abortions, but to promote birth control. I mean, it was birth control, and if that didn't work, then let's abort this baby that's not desirable in our society. So you had that movement happening, but they found out that no matter how much birth control you give to the third world countries, and it just doesn't stick. It's like not enough of it happens to make a dent in the actual control of the population. So then they decided that they had to go, further into it. And that's when the inoculations were used to you know, World Health or the UN or whoever would have these people go, doctors, and they're going to cure you of some kind of smallpox or something out there, and in fact they're giving you a shot that's got HIV, a hot shot. And I have not seen anything to make me really doubt that that wasn't part of their agenda. But as far as it being a killing machine, that was the one thing that, okay, I can understand what Celia talked about. But I also was there when it was happening. And maybe it was, it felt too real to me at the time. And it may just be that, because now, I mean, people walk around with AIDS all the time, or supposed AIDS. So, I don't really know. It's one of those, I know that she ran into a tremendous amount of flack. She's a very well-known reporter, investigative reporter. And she got into a lot of trouble because she did stand up and follow that kind of information. So, but back to my mother and Halloween. She would, the priest gave her two of the most horrific masks I've ever seen. One of them was like a gorilla mask. And I mean, these things, it was a whole head mask. You'd put it right over your head. One was a gorilla that was scary. I mean, really, really scary, and very real looking. And the other was worse because it was like a skull. You know, a skull with partially skin on it, and oh yeah, I mean, awful, terrible mask that the priest gave my mother. And at Halloween, she would take the gorilla mask, and she had an old fur coat, mangy old thing, that she would put on, you know, and she would go to her friends' houses, not on Halloween itself, but like the day before, and she would knock on their door and scare the crap out of them. You'd think they'd get used to it. But the second one she would use, it was either the gorilla thing or this other one. My father had, it was like I don't even know what they would call it, like an overcoat that the mechanics would wear.
You know,
it would go
like
down.
Coverall.
Huh? Coverall type of thing. It would go down past their knees. And Dad had one of these things, and he was very thin, so it was.
Sounds like a lab coat.
Yeah, it's similar too, but it was mechanics used it. And so she would put that on and she would go and scare her friends. And even on Halloween when everything is happening, okay, Mom would dress up in some scary thing, one of those two or some other combination of it. And so she was able to scare a lot of trick-or-treaters away from the house. Because remember, we didn't have much money. And she would start running out of candy. And if you came home a little early, you likely were going to lose your candy bag because Mom was going to get, you know. But then she discovered that if she got really scary, they would run away before they got the candy. So
the Hopkins house is all about the tricks.
Oh my goodness, you know. I just, so every time Halloween comes up, I think of my mom, you know, and she was, but it goes back to the fact that this woman kind of went crazy one time a year. I don't think she knew the Celtic history, you know, or the message behind some of the Halloween stuff, but she got it in the core of her being. If you go crazy once a year, you won't go crazy during the year, because she never did really go crazy. So I look at Halloween as it saved my mother from, you know, being crazy.
You have to praise her spiritual fortitude, because how many were you guys? 10?
10, yeah.
Yeah, you need a special kind of sanity to endure that.
You know, I think her saving grace was if no news is good news.
Yeah, don't bother me.
You know, just, well, because if she worried about every kid, you know, but yeah, so Halloween. So, so we're in the midst of the Halloween season, and we just had a segment on from Dreamland with Whitley. You probably didn't hear it. But this is a book that two guys who were into ghost hunting, I think is basically the genre that they'd be in, came together and wrote a book about weird messages from beyond, like stories of things that happened from beyond. And one of them that really was like, well, this one is, how do you explain this one? It was a train wreck, a very, very bad train wreck. 25 people died in it, and 125 some people were very badly wounded. But in the first car, it was a head-on collision between some doofus engineer that was texting instead of paying attention to a red light on the track. And he went directly onto a track and head-on into a freight train. So the engineering crew and everybody basically in the first car were wiped out, and he was there. He was in the first car. And the mortuary people, or the morgue people, they said that the coroners said that he died instantly, that he was so physically destroyed that he died instantly. But in the next 12 hours, while before his body was found, before they knew exactly how many, who, what, I mean, it was a horrific crash, 35 calls were made from his telephone, his cell phone. And they were made to friends and family of his. It wasn't like some weird, the phone got beat up and started just somehow automatically running through the address list, the contact list. It was only family and friends. And they were able to, you know, okay, so the brother got a call from the cell phone, because there wasn't a voice attached to it, I don't think. They weren't clear on that. It was just a connection that was made. But AT&T and everybody that was involved with the phone and everything else said there's no way that phone could have kept ringing like that, especially because it was only family and friends. You know, if it was some weird thing, it would have run down. It would have been the vet, the doctors, you know, other people that were getting the calls. But no, it was specifically family and friends. And he had been dead.
Well, it's already been proven over and over again how you can have an energy interaction with a digital system, because it's digital, because it's not like the old phone systems used to be based on the Strobe switch, which incidentally was invented by a mortician. I don't know if you know this. When you used to have the phones with the rotary wheel, remember, you would put your finger in and you rotate the wheel.
Right.
Mark the number you want, let go. When it's doing that, the little coil is sending pulses, not 9 pulses, 8 pulses, you know, 5, depending on the number you just marked. So the Stroger switch would respond to that and move to the correct position. That was the analog technology for, you know, a good number of years before the invention of semiconductors and digital electronics. So very difficult to do anything with that because it's all electromechanical movement. But with digital systems, case in point, your good friend Jean Rockefeller, she dials you just thinking that she wants to dial you. And like, it was funny, I missed the first 30 minutes of the show earlier today because I was working in the shop listening to the show. And I heard what she said about the audio clip to this workshop getting edited. And it made me laugh because I thought to myself, Jean doesn't know that she edited. She stopped the recording when she knew that it had to be stopped. But, you know, she's giving credit to some other kind of power. But I'm convinced she's the one who edited it. She didn't know that she did it. And the third case that I know is Dr. Costa, for example, who had been visited by his spiritual guides ever since he was 3 years old. They would show up in his room every night and they would make him do things and they would teach him things. So he was going to school even before he went to human school. People that have shared hotel rooms with him know for a fact that somehow, some way, very early in the morning, between 4 a.m. and 5 a.m., his guides will tell him, "Okay, you gotta get to work." Work means he has to sit down, go into meditation state, and he'll just go off and do something that they ask him. You have to do this, or you have to look at this. Something similar to what Anastasia does, that she lies down and she goes off, and she's able to affect other people through, you know, her inspiration, ideas, mental suggestions. That's what he got used to in his life. And people that have shared hotel rooms with him are attested to the fact that you'll be sleeping in the room. All of a sudden, the phone goes off, and you go pick up the phone, and there's nobody there. That's his guides. They're able to affect the electronics and make things activate. They make things do things like ring the phone, and you go pick it up. There's nothing, nobody there. Just the dial tone.
Well, they told.
So,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
I think, you know, etheric entities are able to affect electronics the same way that our own, for example, our auras are primarily etheric energy. Well, that's one of the things that they teach you in the Flower of Life workshop. You can program your aura to affect electronics. Like, for example, I don't speed. It's not in my nature to speed anywhere, not in the highway, not in very long stretches of road. It just doesn't make any sense to me, getting killed for no reason. But I programmed my aura to be undetectable to police radar, and I don't get detected. I mean, you see them when they're hunting for tickets. They'll stop someone who's going half a mile faster than the speed because it's that time of the month and they have to, you know, make their quota. No. You don't get detected. And that's the intelligence of our aura working upon the electronic equipment. So it doesn't surprise me, you know, many people die and they don't know they're dead. So he's going to interface with the system, and he's going to call his friends and family. Doesn't surprise me there.
Well, another really weird story they told about electronic stuff was this guy got a phone call. It went directly to recording, okay? So he's got the recording of this call. And, again, they weren't really too specific as to what it was, except to say that there was a sound of a crushing and crunching and people screaming. Like there was some destructive thing happened and people screaming. And it wasn't only once that he got it. He kept getting a repeat of this same call going directly to the recording on his cell phone. When you'd look up the number unavailable. Okay, so he didn't know where it was coming from. And he then would play the recording to his friends. You know, what do you think of this? And one woman, they all had the same reaction. This is something awful. They didn't know what it was, but it was something very, very awful. And one woman couldn't even stay in the room. She had to leave. She said, I can't take this. And she,
this is the same case, the case of the train?
No, this is a different case, a totally different case. Mm-hmm. Okay, this guy just starts getting these weird crunching, metallic, something breaking, destroying, and all this crying and people screaming, right? And it was so unnerving to him that he went and got a new phone and a new carrier. And the messaging stopped. Until the day before 9/11, on the new phone, the new carrier, the damn thing happened again. Went straight to recording, and there it was. And the next day, 9/11 happened, and he just knew this was what it was about.
Yeah.
And never had another call. Pretty spooky, that one. I mean, where's that coming from?
Well, that's obviously coming from one of the potential futures. That's the way the law, Ra explains it in the Law of One. The words, again, you have to remember Carla Rukert was not an engineer or a scientist. So Ra had to use what vocabulary was available in her human consciousness. So Ra would use the words probability, possibility, vortices. Those were the, if you read the books, it's five books, that they're all compiled into one book. Ra consistently uses the same expression over and over again. Every time Don Elkins and his questioning would ask about something future, either in the near future or in the far future, and then Ra would respond by saying, probability, possibility vortices indicate so much percentage of something that could happen, because it was never, like you say, you know, the future is something that you're creating. It's not written in stone. But because elements come together, a lot of elements come together, then these elements contribute to the thing truly happening or not. Sometimes one little element that goes off completely dismantles the rest of the potential, like the house of cards coming down because you remove one single card. And that's what this thing sounds like. It was so certain that it was going to happen, you know, he was getting an echo from the future, from the near future.
Yeah, that was, you know, as Whitley and they are discussing it, they kind of all realized it was something. So the event of 9/11 was so horrific and so fundamentally changing to so many timelines. People died in at least the hundreds of thousands in Iraq and Middle East because of 9/11. That you've got a tremendous force of energy, and gosh only knows where that energy could show up and do its thing. But when you look at it, what happened on that day, it was to understand how much energy was really involved in it. You have to look at those satellites that were turned around looking at the Earth and looking at the electromagnetic profile of the Earth. These calls, I should just turn that thing. Oh, for crying out loud. Just a minute.
That's the future calling you. Nancy Hopkins and her temporal phone. Don't you hate it when that happens? Okay, so I guess Nancy is deactivating her phone. Okay. It wasn't me.
I apologize for that. I just turned off the answering machine, so it shouldn't bother
Dolly,
me.
When you say it wasn't me, stop looking at the ceiling like that.
Are you talking to Dolly?
Yes, because you left me alone.
The satellites were turned around looking at the Earth, the electromagnetic profile of the Earth. And the energy that was emitted from the Earth during the time frame of just before 9/11, so just before it even started up, and then, you know, hours later, was like something they had never seen before. So the fact that human consciousness was focused so intently on one place at one time, they could measure the difference in the electromagnetic spectrum.
Yeah, who knows how many human lives the Cabal sacrificed in their black magic ceremonies. That's why they rely so much on human sacrifice, because that jolt of energy is tremendous. It's a tremendous amount of energy, and it's measurable. In fact, it's one of those things in the latest Fulford report. He brings up the subject, and he brings up the subject of, you know, the so-called shooting at the synagogue, and there's a series of books, three books. The first book is called The Golden Compass, and it's been made into a movie. And it's very insightful when it's not planet Earth. It's like a parallel Earth. There are names that you would recognize, like England and Oxford, but it's not this Earth that we're living on. In this particular Earth, what in shamanic tradition you call power animal, they in this reality they call it a daemon. Every person that's alive, you see they have an animal with them. It could be a dog or a cat or a monkey or a tiger, a bird. It could be anything, but it's not an animal in the biological sense of having been born, you know, a cat is born from other cats. No, this animal is you. It's part of you, your existence. Imagine your power animal could be visible and physical, that you could touch it. In fact, it's considered extremely impolite for you to touch somebody else's daemon. And what they were doing is, this secret group was abducting children, taking them to a place in the North Pole somewhere, and they were being put in this machine, where the machine would have like an energy blade that would come down. They would put the daemon in one chamber and the child in the other chamber, and they would bring down this energy guillotine that would sever the connection between the two. So even though the child and the creature do not die, but they're left like zombies afterwards because their connection has been broken. And what they were doing is harvesting, because every time you severed that connection between a child and their daemon, a tremendous amount of energy would be released. I mean, we're talking like megawatts worth of energy. And they were accumulating this energy in order to make to weaken. You know the thing with CERN? What Parks said, that they wanted to create some kind of opening into the fourth dimension. Remember the story that he told, that he wove?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Something like that, because they found that the veil between the dimensions was very thin in the North Pole, and they had already gotten glimpses of our Earth, and that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to break open that veil so they could cross to our Earth. So that's just book number one. It's followed by two other books. So it's very interesting how the author is using fiction to weave this story, which sounds eerily familiar, to what's happening here. You know, because every day it's surfacing more and more how the cabal, they abduct children and all the other horrors that they do with children, and the purposes behind doing it, and how negative energy is the source of their power. The more hatred and the more negative emotions they can get out of a human, it's better for them, because that's the fuel that runs their car, their reality.
Well, you know, that story is oddly familiar to the discussion that we had regarding the dragons. Did you happen to catch that from this morning show?
Yeah.
What we're talking about is the fact that Gene Rockefeller, who is, if you're not familiar with her, she's just an amazingly connected individual. I've never met anybody like Jean. I've met people similar to, but she is definitely the real deal, and you know, has a position. And this is not ego. It's not ego from her or ego from me because I know her or any of this. She just is very, very, I would say, I don't know that there was a lot of times she would think it was blessed, but she's definitely blessed with connections. And she recently, in the on the 23rd of September, on the solstice, did a solstice, the equinox, did a group workshop, and on that Saturday she grounded dragon energy. And she was, in the tape he alluded to, was the fact that I've never known Jean to actually tape any of these things. Even in a private session, she tells people, please don't tape. Because you've locked in that tape, talking about electronics and stuff, she's astute to know that when you're taping a session with her, as she is releasing all these negative energies, if you're taping it, you're capturing those energies into that tape. So then you play the tape back to yourself, and boom, you've just interjected those same energies back into yourself. So she asks people, you know, she tells people, please don't do this, you know, because why? Let's not have the session if you're going to record it and listen to it later. So she doesn't normally do recordings, but she was very pushed to do a recording of this. And so it was a two-hour presentation, and she was taping with the concept of just keeping the tape recorder on. But it's like Walt said, that it ended up being three tapes, because all of a sudden she'd realized the tape had stopped. And it was self-editing, because I asked her, I said, well, what was it taking out? And she said, it was taking out when I had them stand up and work with the horses, because they were in the barn, they were on the farm. These people from all over the United States were working to bring in, ground the dragon energy, but also to, you know, do healings and work with the horses. It's an amazing show. You really ought to, you owe it to yourself to listen to the full recording of the Shungite show this morning. But what I got from my introduction to the dragons, and we've said this many times, it was essentially a remote view where I ended up with a dragon. I didn't even know dragons really physically existed, and ended up with a dragon in front of me who, I mean, it was a dragon, but it was a dragon that, you know, could talk, could think. I suppose he could talk because he was mumbling. He wasn't really saying anything, but when he looked at me, when he noticed me, and oh, he did. He pointed at me and he said, "You." He left me because I got thrown out of the remote because I was so stunned by, you know, all of a sudden you don't normally have somebody turn around and actually see you. The djinn have done it to me. The dragons have done it to me. So I, you know, but as I'm leaving the view, I'm hearing they've got to see the dragon. And so my interpretation, and I talked about this when it happened, my interpretation was that people had to see the dragon, because right at that same time, when I'm being really introduced, not just theoretically concepts of dragons, but actually, wow, these things might be real, there was a YouTube of a dragon flying over New York City. Did you see that by any chance? A few years ago. A couple years. Probably 16. Are you muted?
Sorry, I was muted. I think I sent it to you.
Oh, probably. And it actually shows a dragon flying over New York City. Now, yes, of course this could be photoshopped, but my recollection at the time was nobody was able to really get a, yes, it is photoshopped, but more importantly, that thing resonated as true to me. This felt like this was a real recording. So I meet the dragon. He says they got to see the dragon, and I'm thinking that that's what he meant, was that people have to be able to, that we have to have enough belief system in the dragon so that our minds will accept seeing them, because they're probably there. It's just like the, you know, the ship coming over to the new world. They couldn't see the ship because their minds couldn't even comprehend it. It was a reflection in the water.
What the hell is this thing on the water?
Right. They saw the reflection in the water. And then, you know, in trying, asking the questions, what's causing this, they could then see the ship. So I thought it was that. But then a number of things occurred after that that made me realize that in the beginning, we did have that attachment. Now, what was it that you call a Damien?
The term used in the movie, it's Damon.
Damon.
I just put it on the chat. Damon. And according to the storyline in children, until the age of 8 or 9. It's constantly changing form. One moment it'll be a bird, another moment it'll be an ocelot, another moment it'll be a kitten, another moment it keeps changing, because as the child's personality is evolving and changing, so does the creature reflect that. So when the child is passed, it takes 7 years for a child's personality to fully develop and anchor. After the 7th year, don't even attempt to change that child, because you're going to have a very hard time. So they reflect that in this storyline. So after their 9th or 10th year, a child, the appearance of his daemon will remain for the rest of his life. Because, okay, that's... And it's interesting that in the characters, the creatures actually do reflect the personality of the character, of the different characters in the storyline.
Well, because this is a fiction book, but I'm not sure that a lot of fiction isn't actually true. You know, that you're sitting there and you want to write a story. And so you sort of open up your mind to the creative juices, the imagination, whatever it is that we actually do when we write fiction, and I'm talking about creating stories out of seemingly nothing. But what if it is hearing a story? Because when I wrote the 9/11 Crusade, it's totally fiction. It's not my first fiction book, but, you know, it's a totally fiction book. I felt like, I had a weird situation because I was the office manager of a company, but the company was about to bottom up. I didn't know that within a few years, but it got very, very quiet. There wasn't too much going on. So for most of the 8 hours of a day that I was sitting as the office manager, I was writing this book. So I would go to work like excited because I was going to hear the next portion of the story. I never felt like I knew the story and was just writing it down, that I had created it. It was like I was hearing it. And when I got to the end of the book, I was stunned that they had ended the book. I'm going like, why'd you stop here? You know, and they said, you can always write another book. You said you wanted to tell the story about 9/11. That's what you just did. Period. End of story. And so I'm wondering if there's not a lot of fiction writers out there that the same thing happens to them. They're actually hearing or feeling or sensing or thinking or connected to real information.
That also goes to explain writer's block. Writer's block is not that they can't write. Is that they've lost their connection to the quantum field, where they're pulling the story out of the, you know, eternal universal library, the same way that the quantum field has all the potentials of everything that has been, is, and will be, and all the inventions that will ever be, all the creations that will ever exist, everything existing as a potential, just a seed that needs some fertile ground for it to become. That's exactly what that the quantum field is, an infinite eternal library. All you have to do is, the same way that you tune your radio to this channel or that channel, your awareness, your higher awareness is tuning into that, and you're picking up the stories. And if you're like Stephen King, of course you're going to tune into horror stories because that's what floats your boat. But in your case, the 9/11 affected you in such a way that you needed to bring the story. Okay, what the heck is this? You know, what's behind this? And that was all you needed. That was all the motivation you needed to tune in and ground the story here. So it's not unlike channeling. It's just that you're not in a trance state. You're you, and you're sitting down writing.
Well, you're sort of in a trance state.
It's true, because summer went by and you didn't know when it went by.
No, that was when I was writing Cosmic Reality.
Oh.
That was a different thing. But the point here is that maybe this fiction writer talking about the connection to these etheric animal figures, our animal guides, that maybe it really goes back to the concept of that we were once a magically connected species that was connected to dragons.
Look at the thing that, for example, when Gene was talking about the different animals that teleport, that doesn't astound me one bit, because humans are capable of doing it, as shown by Anastasia. The problem is that the human was dumbed down on purpose and lost that ability. Like in the first book I'm reading on the chapter, he's asking her, why don't you wear heavier clothing? Why are you walking around naked? And she explained that the human body has the natural ability to adjust itself to any climate, to any condition of extreme heat or extreme cold. It's just that humans wearing clothing have lost that ability. So I doused for the number to recover that ability, and it really does work. I mean, I don't care how cold it is out there. I'm just walking around in a t-shirt and short pants because my body is adjusting by itself. So just like that, the ability to teleport is absolutely natural to a human because he has been endowed with that ability. It's just that we've been dumbed down, and when we come across, oh, look, this cat teleports, we go, ooh, ah. You know, you should be crying in sadness that the cat can do something that should be natural to you. You should be kind of miffed. Oh, why is that cat able to do it, and I forgot how to do it? It's part of your set of powers.
Well, I'm thinking that the dragon... Anyway, let's just... Because we're almost at the top of the hour. So, Gene put together the three tapes, and it's now available on cosmicreality.net at the Shungite store. Just go to the tab, Shungite store tab, at cosmicreality.net. And when the store starts to come up, you're going to see a list on the left side of the categories. Go down to the bottom, and you'll see Friends of Cosmic Reality. Click on that, and we've got the digital tape up. Now, it is $99, and for many people, that is going to be expensive. It would be for me. However, she wants this... We believe in energy exchange, and all of us that are working in this... really have a certain amount of disdain for money. We feel like it's limiting you. You get focused on it. That's what you go for. So we sort of don't like to play with it. But what we look at it is we make a lot of money because by making money and not owning it or controlling it, but by making it, you're expanding the flow of energy. So she wants to put this out at an honorable energy exchange, okay? And yet, on the other side of it, she wants to make it affordable. She wants to be able to have everybody listen to it, too. So what she's done is if you go to buy that and you get it's a digital download, put in the coupon code COSMIC, and that's all in capitals, COSMIC 1030. In other words, COSMIC 1030. You'll get a 10% off of that. And she is asking people, you know, share the information. You know, you buy...
Where is it that you say in the store? Because I'm looking at the store page, but I don't... Where is this link?
Go on the categories. On the left side, it should be down Cosmic Reality, right down near the bottom of the left-hand side.
Okay. Cosmic Reality. Oh, there it is. Shungite Friends. Okay, right. Found it.
Okay. And...
I want to put the link on the chat.
Yeah. And if you put in the code, and you can write the code in for them too, COSMIC 1030, you can get 10% off that price. But also, once you've got that digital recording, you know, feel free to pass it on to your friends and family. You know, people that want to make a change in their life by reintegrating essentially your connection to dragon energy, but the dragon energy is, like I say, it could be very similar to this fictional story about, you know, the guides that we have that are always there. I mean, for all I know, maybe dragon is another version of angel. I don't know, but I do know that having listened to that tape, and Derek also listened to it, there is a profound change that happens to you energetically. And I highly recommend that, you know, get your friends together, you know, get your yoga class together. You know, get up the money, pay for it, you all listen to it. And just, because the more people that interface with the audio tape, the more powerful it becomes in the collective. You know, that's why we do these shows. So we're at the top of the hour, and so it's 3 minutes. We'll be back after that. Yeah? Okay, good.
Okay.
Just a young gun with a quick fuse. I was uptight, wanna let loose. I was dreaming of bigger things and wanna leave my old life behind. Not a yes sir, not a follower. Fit the box, fit the mold, have a seat in the foyer. Take a number. I was lightning before the thunder.
Thunder, 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 thunder.
Welcome back to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show, October 30th, 2018. I'm Nancy Hopkins. With me is my co-host and my partner in the Shanghai business, Walter Silva. Hi, Walt.
Hello, Nancy.
You know, it was funny because I love it when people say things and it indicates that they've been listening to us. And there was a Facebook exchange about the S4 stickers, okay? And somebody asked, I can't remember what's on the S4. What makes it, what is it that it is that makes it different? You know, he'd forgotten the silver, right? So I said, it's silver, da, da, da. And then this other person comes back and they said, it's silver saturated stickers by Silva, isn't it? Meaning Walt Silva makes these. You know, other people, we've given the formula to everybody in the world, and anybody can make it, but only an S4 is made by Walt Silva.
Well, the thing is that you have to get, one of the things that people have to get away from the idea that it's that Shanghai is an inanimate object. Mistake number one. If you're going to work with Shanghai under that notion, under that philosophical contemplation, is I'm looking at an inanimate object, just a dead rock, then my suggestion to you is drop it and leave it and walk away and never look at it again, because it's, you're not going to get the results you want. You work with Shanghai. No, you don't make Shanghai do anything. You work with it, not against it. So if you don't have that understanding, I'm not trying to make up some mystical, magical, esoteric formula. I'm just saying what is true, and I'm one of those people who openly says I'm not energy sensitive, but yet when your face is getting burnt like sun like a sunburn and there's no sun in the sky, okay, then this is not, I'm not making this up, because I don't do that. I don't do self-suggestion hypnosis.
Well, you know, I gotta tell you, you know how I last show I mentioned the kabah again, the cube, the black mm-hmm. cube. Mm-hmm. And last night, maybe it was the night before. But I'm there minding my own business, and it was some program comes on talking about these holy sites. And somebody calls me, and I'm talking to them, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And so I hung up the phone and hadn't been mucking with the television, so that same show was on. But what are they talking about? The Cube in Mecca, you know? So now I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know? Well, you know that, you know how it's a perfect cube, okay? But it's made out of granite blocks. What the black thing is, I didn't know this, Walt, that black facade on this building, this square building, this cube, and the what did they say it was? It's like 56 feet, and 56 feet is like almost six stories, and 35 feet wide, so that's, you know, turn the building on the side, and you're you know, three and a half stories. That's how the size of it is covered in black silk with gold embroidering in it. That whole black look to it is actually a curtain of silk.
Yeah.
And that they change it's it out organ, every year.
It's an organ concentrator. The way it's the layering.
Oh, man.
Nobody gets this because everything is religion and superstition and blah, blah, blah. It's actually a device. That's why it was a containment device for gin. It's an organ concentrator. What better way to trap a gin? Well, like an organ concentrator, it can't escape.
Well, not only that, but in looking for it, and just, you know, Google, because when I put up the YouTube, I'll put up the links to these. I actually found two sites, and one of them is well, they're both sort of the same thing, but it's a 3D rendering, so you can get inside the cube, and you can see what's inside of it. All right. And on the walls are all this, I mean, I don't know what it is, but it's either language or something, all written all over the inside of the walls.
It's spells.
And the floor
is... If you write
a
spell, the vibration is there.
Yeah, and the floor is marble. Okay. Now, if you remember when somebody said to us that the jinn were supposedly captured in the Kaaba, and that they were there protecting it, right? That was what I can't even remember who it was. It was a doc who? I don't remember who it was that wrote it, because it was quite a few years ago. And so you had just done an incantation, for lack of another term, to free the jinn, because we had already thought we had freed them all, and then they did a head count, remember?
Well, no, what happened is that we... since we don't know what formula would do that, we knew the I mean, I, at least, I don't know if you saw it in your remote viewing. I saw it in my shamanic journey at the time. Those sigils that were floating up, floating above the rock in the cavern. And those sigils were actually the spells keeping them in bondage. So we projected the Shanghai tetrahedron, and we asked the Shanghai to give them the energies, the essences, and the codes, because since the Shanghai has access to the quantum field, the knowledge of the codes, it's there. It's part of the quantum field where everything is. And give them that in order to break those sigils so that they could be released and never be captured again.
Well, what we did was they were using basically the name, the frequency of the jinn to control each one of them. So what the etheric device did was when that sound was entering the realm of the jinn, that an alternate absolute opposite sound would occur to destroy the frequency. It just drops. You got zero frequency when you bring two of the opposites together. Zero's out. Quantum entanglement. You open the quantum door, right? So, but we found out that we didn't free them all because they were trapped in the rings. In the iron rings. Remember that fiasco?
Yeah.
We had to get them out of the iron rings, and the jinn were freaking out because they thought that somehow or another we were going to hurt them, so we had to be very careful. I mean, it was like, that's one of the best shows we ever did, because we did these things live. I mean, we weren't messing around. And that was, after that, we thought, well, maybe we better, you know, do a big, you know, see if there's anybody out there. And so you did this general, if we've missed anybody, you know, let's free them. And then somebody wrote in from chat and said, did you know that there's supposed to be gin inside the kebab. So I, when he said that, it forced me into doing a spontaneous remote. And I told you, I found myself inside this building. And near, I saw it as up, like the wall goes up and then there's a ceiling.
Can I pause you for just second there? What, you just said the words, spontaneous remote, and I found myself inside this building. I know it means nothing to you, but it means everything to me. That is confirmation, direct, concrete confirmation that the building is a containment, not a protection or a fortress, because if it were designed to protect from outer forces, you wouldn't be there seeing anything. But it was designed to contain something inside. That's what you were able to slip in and see.
Yes,
you see
the
difference?
Yes, they were not trying
it's
to keep
containment. It was a It wasn't keeping anybody out. It was keeping things in.
Correct. Absolutely correct. And I said I saw these weird, to me, my mind interpreted them as lanterns because of the connection, I think, to gin and lanterns and the, you know, that whole thing.
The mythology.
Right, right. But I had never seen a picture of the inside of this thing. Heck, I didn't even know it was a cube when I got there. But when I went to this 3D thingy, okay, lo and behold, they got me inside of this thing, and sure enough, just exactly like I saw, except instead of being like lanterns, they're these weird containment things, Walt, hanging at the ceiling level. But it's not actually the ceiling level. The building goes up much higher. Above that, I saw it as ceiling. That you know, it was like there must be a ceiling, but no, there's in fact another three stories above it. You know, inside of it. But it was like stunning to me that what I saw physically is a physical picture. It's kind of hard to do the adjustment on this particular one, you know. But I actually played with it until I had myself positioned where I found myself when I went inside of it and how I was looking up and seeing them. You know, and I was like, yeah, definitely I'd been here. You know, this is something that makes a lot of sense to me. Okay, so, all right, so anyway, that's a story aside from watching this thing that was replaying this kebab thing. So they're talking about how the Muslims have to go and do seven turns around this square thing in the courtyard there, and that in one corner of the square. Now, I didn't understand this area either. I had heard about the black rock associated with Mecca and that it had healing powers, it was mystical, that somehow or another Abraham was involved in it. I mean, I've heard all that, but I thought it was inside the building. I did not realize it was the cornerstone of the building. So they've got this silver, and it's an odd shape.
Yeah, you notice the the resonance plate around it?
Yes, yes, yes.
It's not just embedded in the masonry. It actually has a plate around it, you know, designed specifically to resonate that. In what direction? Inwardly. Not outwardly.
Yeah,
take a look at the picture. Look at the curve.
But what was so stunning about this thing is that the... I'm going to take this thing. All right. What was so stunning about it was the you got the silver thing, and if you just, geez, I should do this right now here, Walt. I'm gonna, where the heck is a Google? Do I have a Google up? Okay. All right, I actually have it. Okay, so if you guys just click on this link, it's the Google search. Probably too big for the thing, but I don't know if it will. No, you probably have to put it in there. Shoot. Okay.
You want an image of that thing? I have one.
Okay.
You want me to put it on chat?
Yeah, put it on chat because that doesn't seem to be working. I don't think it'll click for me. No, it won't. So disregard what I just did. But when you look at this particular these pictures that are, he's probably going to show you one too. I'd never seen them, but if I was looking at these pictures here, I looked at them. I pulled these suckers up. There is a creepy picture. I mean, you got this, it looks like a demon or something in it. Like, I don't know, a creature inside these, you know, most of the pictures that you see in Google search, okay? And some of them don't look like the same thing, but there's a whole lot of them that's probably the same picture replayed, that's got this kind of creepy face to it. But when I was looking at the video, they actually had a video of somebody right taking it, and it got so far inside of this containment thing. I mean, if you just rotate this silver containment, it's an eye. You know, right. They've got it so that it's, you know, it's like you were laying down on your side looking at the eye. But if they just rotated it, it's an eye. And inside of this, when it was on video, oh my God, you could clearly see that what this thing is shungite. I have no doubt in my mind that black rock isn't shungite, Walt.
You can't use it with black magic, though.
No, but that's the thing about it, is you can't use it for black magic. Who says it's been used for black magic? You know, I mean, because you got people that say it's just a black stone. It's nothing. It's a meteorite, right? But you have an awful lot of people that go there with the best of intent, with the most profound feeling of reverence for the whole Mecca experience. Okay? There is a tremendous amount of energy that is exchanged between all of these pilgrims and this particular cube that just happens to have a cornerstone that is in a silver containment vessel that, if you turn it, looks like an eye, and inside that thing, I'm telling you, it's shungite. Now, shungite came to the planet in 2.5 billion years ago. Abraham, somehow or another, got a hold of this stone. And again, trying to figure out the story, there's so many different versions of the story and Abraham and the stone and everything. But,
the story of what ethnic groups traveled where has been so distorted. Like, for example, it's a miracle that we have the truth that Chinese mariners actually visited Venezuela in the 11th century. That's why there's Chinese DNA among the Venezuelan population. And the Arabs did visit Nordic lands, so it's no surprise that Arabs would have visited an area like Karelia and brought back, you know, this amazing stone. Who knows how they discovered or felt. Or to them, the Magi, you know, these were master psychics. They could have very easily perceived the energy in the stone and brought it back as something magical. So it's not like psychics are an invention of this century. They've existed forever. So that could have been brought from Russian. I mean, hasn't been history been distorted enough? Like, the entire Russian history has been wiped out of the planet?
Oh, sure. So, and if, you know, I mean, if we honor the story of Anastasia, her rendition of the Vedrus, you know, perhaps the Vedrus understood that stone too.
Sure.
You know, this, and you get this weird history of the Black Stone and societies of secret peoples that are working magic with Black Stones. You know, there's different stories about them. One guy, you know, gave black stones to everybody because it was the way he was controlling. I mean, it's always had this, not this perfectly awesome goodness thing to it. Very often you get kind of a negative connotation to what the power might be. But who knows what the real story is, except for the fact that it's an extraordinary, powerful energy. And I'm telling you, that stone, that black stone. Now, they claim that the black stone was really white to begin with. But they all kind of agree that it was meteorite type of, you know. I've never seen a white meteorite. Have you?
No, but shanghai becomes white when it's heated. Remember,
when it's heated, it is. It does. Yeah, it becomes absolutely white. Does. It becomes white. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, yep. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the more we delve into this realm of sci-fi, reality sci-fi, the more connections get made. You know, but I'm telling you, shanghai, it's the cornerstone of the Kaaba in Mecca. And below it, of course, is the Ark of Gabriel that they've now got in Antarctica. I don't know. And Gene is anchoring dragon energy. And I'm telling you, ever since I went through this meditative, the tape is only about an hour now. But to go through that, it's a profound change that you feel. I didn't realize the true impact of it, except after the fact, because I was, you know, I got really achy. I had all these little symptoms of not feeling good that I, you know, but I don't get sick, and so I'm like, what is this? It's got to be energy, but it didn't feel like energy because it kept going on and on and on. And I'm like, what is this? Well, then I talked to Jean, and she says, yes. She says, that's a dragon energy finally integrating. I said, Jean, it was 3 weeks. And she said, I know. She said, but it happened to me. And we checked with each other, and it had happened on the same Wednesday. Both of us had gotten it, but she didn't have it for a week like I did. She had it for like 3 days, but she's, you know, 20 years younger than I am, 30 years younger. I don't know, 20 maybe. I don't know, but she's much younger than I am.
Well, isn't everybody younger than you?
Apparently. Well, except Dolly. Dolly's older than I am.
No, Dolly's a little kid. You can tell by her giggles.
Well,
nobody old can giggle like that.
That's probably true. I actually have never hugged her, so. I mean, wouldn't it be a hoot if we find out that it's just a 15-year-old kid playing with us all this time?
Yes. It's called the Dolly conspiracy.
Has anybody actually hugged Dolly? Does you know? I mean, not. I'm talking. For all we know, Annette and those other people or her family, they could be involved in it. You know, maybe she's mimicking these different people. Oh, Annette, yes, here is Annette. Yeah, Dolly's in chat and she's laughing out loud. No, it's. She likes us. Anyway, it's amazing the continual weaving of the weave together. I can't tell you how much interest, how I really do believe that you should get the experience the dragon. You know, go to that site. You put the link up there, did you, to get to it?
Put it on the chat.
Good, good, good. Okay, so do you have Wolfer? Do you want to talk more about this, or what? If you'd come to my house, yeah. If I'd come to her house, I might.
Unless they do a commercial transporter release, but I don't see anybody getting Nancy out of her house.
Fulford, did he say anything interesting this week? Because a lot of interesting things happen. And I have to say this, okay? Now, we got this crazy-ass bomber that's supposedly bomber that sent all these supposed pipe bombs.
Yeah, and none of them worked.
None of them worked. Right. But we have a saying down here in South Florida that anything that happens anywhere in the world will have a South Florida connection. Okay? Like, the first guy Ada that was the first plane to hit, the pilot was a guy by Muhammad Ada, and the security guard at the condominium where I worked, he comes in and he goes, oh my God, Nancy, he says, I wonder what guy, and they had the picture of all the supposed terrorists, and He actually saw at a pub that the guy used to frequent. Now here's a Muslim that isn't supposed to drink or, you know, have anything to do with sex and, you know, all these things. And he actually was hanging out in, just a kind of a liquor dive, you know, bar. And it just so happens that my security guard friend was waiting for a friend outside, and this attic came out. And he says, I remember him so clearly because he scared me half to death. He said, I looked at him, and I just got such incredible chills and, you know, about him. But it turns out that this bomber, okay, is not 20 miles from where I live. That's where he was hanging out. He came from South Florida, and I was laughing because, you know my stories about the post office down here in Opa-locka. The main post office that, you know, it's the post office people up in Orlando told me that that was a known place for people to steal stuff.
Wow.
Okay. So all of a sudden I actually had packages to go to the post office, and I said, I am not putting these in the post office right now, because they had shut down Opa-locka's postal facility going through it because they did a tracking back and found out that quite a few of these had somehow or another gone through the Opa-locka station. And that's how they actually traced the guy, was they found a fingerprint, I think DNA, on the packaging. But it was the Postal Service. So, we've got this crazy person, and, you know, if you read the story about him, he was a bodybuilder that also was an exotic dancer. I wonder if I ever saw him on stage. Just kidding. Just kidding. But he's in his 50s, so he hasn't done anything but that, living out of his van, a Trump supporter. I mean, everything about this just sounds like, first off, where did he get the money to build all of these thingies?
Yeah.
You know, he was living out of, he virtually didn't have a job, and he was living out of his van. I mean, you know, so that story falls apart. But another story that we touched on last week was the caravan, the mob caravan coming up from South America.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was listening to this one man analyze this, and the guy says, where's the porta toilets?
Well, right? It's like, where's the water? Where's the food?
Well, but
you know,
the
where are they sleeping?
Oh, no, yeah, I know, but food and water, you know, okay. He actually had gotten information from American sources that massive amounts of these porta toilets had been sent down there from America.
Yeah.
I mean,
welcome.
This is a different thing. Instead of following the money, we're following the toilets. Who ordered those toilets? Who's paying?
They're not even trying. They're not even trying to conceal their actions. They're actually doing things out in the open.
It's unbelievable.
They've lost the flair for secrecy, I guess.
It's unbelievable.
They've run out of patience.
Well, not only that, but the president got up there and said that, you know, there's that gang, that terrible gang people are involved in this, and terrorists are involved in it. Well, he wasn't just talking out of his fanny. He actually had been told by, who was it? I think it was Iran, but it was one of the nations that we still, you know, have some connection with, that warned America that they had seen over 1,000 people leave their country, going to Central and South America. That all of a sudden, all these people are going there, and many of them had terrorist connections, or were you know, suspected of terrorist connections. So just before this caravan of people started moving, there was an influx of over a thousand could be terrorists into that same area, and now you've got all of this organized. I mean, they're being fed. There's water. There's toilets out there. And they keep coming closer and closer and closer to the borders of the United States. And the president will not let them cross. I mean, this is, talk about a line in the sand. And yet it's such a, it, I mean, I, as far as a false flag drama environment, event, I have to admire their organization. You know, and why isn't it that there's not somebody down there saying, I just saw, you know, 100 porta toilets here? You know, why isn't there any real information coming out of these countries? It's fascinating.
Well, it's, I mean, do we need to mention for the umpteenth time that all information, all news media companies are owned by the cabal? I mean, do we really need to repeat that to the audience? So the only news you're going to hear are the news they want you to hear, not what you need to know or the truth. Like, look at these, look at the news they broadcasted during the hurricane. I mean, we were looking at a clip in YouTube that was absolutely absurd. There's this guy wearing like a waterproof, you know, overcoat. And behind him, you see this image of a tremendous wind that's literally tearing the trees apart. And he's standing right there. Not a drop of water on him moves from him. His clothing don't move. And there's supposed to be like a bush in front of him. It's like standing still, like a statue. Where is this wind that's behind him? So you can tell, if you pay attention, that he's standing in front of a screen. You know, he's all made up like in a theater play with all these props. And behind him, they put a screen and they're projecting a film. You know, that's real news. That's the truth for you that need to be informed about this hurricane. It was so absurd. It was like, this is Sesame Street news. I mean, they're not even bothering to conceal the fact that you're making this up. They're banking on people being, you know, brainless zombies, and they'll believe anything we tell them because we are CNN, we're this, we're that. People have no choice but to believe. Oh, come on.
Well, buying that? Okay, so if we can't listen to mainstream media, let's listen to Ben Fulford's version of reality. Do you have the Ben Fulford report?
Yeah, I have it on.
I just enjoy listening to Ben tell his stories, because it's such a different take on reality, and it's probably
the thing is that in the past things have happened where you, from this source or that other source, things that he has mentioned have come about. It's not like he said this and it never happened. No, he said things about banks, he said things about this, and then you hear another presenter or another speaker actually corroborating what he said. So, and you can see how discerning he is, that he will say, this person told me this, but I'm not putting my money on it. So even he's questioning what he's been told, but he's presenting it for your analysis, and, you know, you choose, you know, are you going to listen to this or not? Okay, the report is dated yesterday, and the title is Message to the Banking Elite, Trick or Treat. It is going to be an especially haunting Halloween for the Hazarian Mafia banking elite, because they have been given an October 31st deadline to return the gold they stole or face being systematically hunted down and exterminated, say Asian Secret Society, CIA, and White Dragon Society sources. After that deadline, bounties of gold will be placed on senior bankers, starting with the heads of the EU Central Bank, the Bank of Japan, the Federal Reserve Board, and the BIS, the sources say. The White Dragon Society has offered the Hazarian Mafia a way out of the situation. They all they have to do is monetize in a constructive way and reality-based manner a $40 trillion worth of 1934 Henry Morgenthau bonds to finance the establishment of a meritocratic future planning agency. This would be enough to end poverty, stop environmental destruction, and finance human expansion into the universe. The alternative is death to all the Hazarian gangsters involved in central bank fraud and Babylonian debt slavery. In the U.S., meanwhile, Pentagon sources say President Donald Trump had a briefing and dinner with top military brass at the White House on October 23rd in a blunt message to Israel, the Democrats, the deep state, and its invading army from Mexico not to steal the midterm elections. The photo below shows clearly where the U.S. military stands, and I will put that photo here in the chat for people to see. Okay, here we go.
I just want to warn you that Hope says don't read the grizzly bits, Walt.
Oh. Well, that's why I purposely, when I sent you and Jean and Dolly the report, I purposely took out the photos. Because they were grisly material. There is also a major push going on to take down the rogue regime of Saudi Israeli. instead of Saudi Arabia, he's making a play on words. Multiple sources agree. The murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi is, despite attempts by the Hazarians to distract us with false flags, etc., turning out to have been a fatal mistake. The head of state of Russia, Germany, and France were in Istanbul last week to meet with Turkish President Recep Erdogan to discuss this murder and the future of the rogue Zionist Saudi Israeli regime, according to Russian sources. The CIA sources try to convince this writer that the murder never actually took place by sending the following statement about the summit, to which U.S., Israel, and China were not invited. So there's a paragraph here in quotes of what the CIA source has to say, and this is what the guy's saying. They are there to discuss the Khashoggi matter. They are trying to figure out how to release the truth about Khashoggi. He is not dead. He is also not available for anyone to meet. The heads of the special powers that be, U.S., Russia, China, Turkey, France, Germany, Saudi Arabia, and Israel, know exactly where he is. Let's just say Khashoggi fucked them all. He turned their own unacknowledged special application program weapon against them. He had the access codes. End quotes. The Russians responded by sending the horrific photographs of Khashoggi's dismembered body. So that's the part that's, you know... he talks about, you know, the predilections of the Hazarians for how they deal with that. However, as the CIA source, when confronted with the photographs, insisted that his information was correct and said the photos could be faked. He said DNA testing and comparison of dental records were needed. In any case, Pentagon sources say this horrific act has led to a snowballing global Saudi boycott that may include not just EU captains of industry, Airbus, Siemens, ABB, and EDF, but Asian giants Samsung, Hyundai, Sumitomo, and it may progress into an EU arms embargo where even Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is under pressure to cancel a $15 billion arms deal approved by his predecessor, Stephen Harper. Also, with the EU Parliament voting 325-1 for a EU arms embargo and German Chancellor Angela Merkel leading, Trump may be forced to use the EU arms embargo on Saudi Arabia to push for a UN arms embargo, the sources say. Okay, since you were ex-military and all of that jazz, what does an arms embargo entail? When you forbid a country from buying any weapons anywhere? Is that what that is?
It forbids people from selling them to certain places.
Okay. Like you couldn't sell your grenade launchers to certain countries.
Well, like the Iran-Contra fiasco, okay? There was an embargo on American companies selling weapons to Iran.
Okay.
So the Americans sold the weapons to Honduras. And then Honduras sold the weapons to Iran. That's what the Iran-Contra affair was all about. Well, I know
so
this.
It was just
I know this because the company that I worked for, okay,
sold a lot to Honduras.
The guy that owned my company was also the arms dealer in the Iran-Contra fiasco.
Wow.
Oh, I mean, I met some really hairy black guys. And I don't mean colored black guys. I mean black guys. The guys. Yeah, the guys that work the black side of it. Oh, my God. There was so many stories. I could write quite an interesting either fiction or nonfiction book about the people that when you get into that kind of arms, community. There's a lot of really, don't worry about that one and don't worry about that rule. And, it's like you talk about the Wild West. It's still out there. But that's what that is. Countries are forbidden. That's why you have to have, import licenses and export licenses. When we would go to sell a weapon to a country, we had to go through the State Department to get permission to sell to that particular country. Mm-hmm. We actually got into a situation where somebody brokering for Georgia, previous Soviet Union, province, is now Georgia, independent sort of thing. And this guy contracted with us to buy a bunch of grenade launchers that were supposed to go to Georgia, but the State Department wouldn't let it happen.
Mm.
So that's what that's about.
Okay. Khashoggi was murdered because he was about to expose Saudi Israeli's use of chemical weapons in Yemen, according to the Express newspaper in England, and he gives the link for that. There is now a big push by the Hazarians to get Khashoggi out of the news cycle, the Pentagon sources say. They add that the alleged murder of 11 Jews at a synagogue in Pittsburgh last week was a false flag failed Hail Mary to get Trump to ignore Jewish vote fraud or migrant caravan, back gun control, and give Jewish community center taxpayers money for security and establish Jewish victimhood ahead of 9/11 truth and Gaza invasion. However, my college friend Christopher North happens to live a few blocks from the shooting, and he believes it really happened and knows the families of some of the victims. He called a local blood bank and was able to confirm there was a huge call for blood from local hospitals after the shooting. His daughter Sophia filmed the aftermath and posted it at the link below. Nonetheless, former CIA agent Robert David Steele notes that, in quotes, as we know from a review of all past false flags, the Zionists are more than happy to kill their own, and in parentheses, Argentina Jewish Community Center, as well as Americans, in parentheses he's put U.S.'s Call, U.S.'s Liberty, 9/11. Their objective, to legalize the censorship at Google Gestapo, where anyone who questions anything is considered anti-Semitic. Hopefully soon the Jewish people will be freed from 3,000 plus years of Babylonian captivity and will no longer have to be murdered by their secret masters for propaganda reasons. Meanwhile, a member of an Asian secret society had the following advice for Westerners fighting to free themselves from the Hazarians. They always present you with a duality, either fascism or communism, and there is no other choice. Either we let the Chinese communists take over or we are going to be slaves of fascist Europe, he says. It is 2018, 200 years since the Waterloo stunt, and I certainly hope the light side has learned something useful by now, he added. The source said, as soon as the U.S. starts arresting the likes of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama as a show of good faith on the part of the U.S., the Asians will send tons of gold under U.S. Navy escort to be piled up on the front lawn of the White House for the world to see. Trump can issue new currency from the gold, he promises. He was advised to take a look at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba to see for himself the facilities have been built for huge numbers of prisoners. We are now hearing that the arrest will begin after the November 6th midterm elections. This is likely to be coordinated with a Russian move to shut down Hazarian regime in the Ukraine. But all we can say is that there is definitely operational silence in both the U.S. and Russia, indicating that some big coordinated operation is taking place. However, the CIA source mentioned above said that many of the criminals that people want arrested are already dead, and all that they will be able to arrest will be computer graphics or clones. Maybe, but one criminal who can be arrested is Satan-worshipping Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Netanyahu went last week to Oman, hoping the Sultan would provide him with protection from imminent arrest, Mossad sources say. Rothschild and P2 Freemason Agnelli family sources say they are hoping to, as the Japanese expression goes, cut off the lizard's tail to escape by sacrificing Netanyahu and the fake Mohammed bin Salman in order to protect themselves. This means special forces will have to raid the California tech companies like Google, Facebook, PayPal, and the big pharmaceutical companies, instead of pharmaceuticals, he's saying pharmaceutical companies, as well as the central banks, if we are to end this. It would also help if we can end the imprisonment on false charges of fellow freedom fighters such as Winston Shrout. For details, see this YouTube link. Another thing to keep in mind is that, according to CIA sources, many of the elite are faking their own deaths in the hopes of evading justice or revenge. This source says the reported death of Thai billionaire Vichai Srivaddhanaprabha in a helicopter crash is an example. Vichai was not on the helicopter. Read the article carefully. A person close to the family reported the information to the BBC. He has now become another one of the elite to disappear from the scene. He is not liked by many of Thailand's old money clan in Bangkok. A good way to go off radar for good. And that's all he wrote.
Well, Robert David Steele, David Steele, what's his first name? David Steele. But he actually also has confirmed that the Saudi crown prince, the one that seemed to be the good guy that had taken out so many of the cabal powerhouses in the Saudi Arabia. You remember when we did that show? Good looking kid.
The what? The what?
The Saudi Arabian crown prince. If I told you, I don't remember his name. But the crown prince, the good looking guy. We did a show, we covered him pretty much, because all of a sudden, like, all these very powerful Saudi industrialist bankers were taken out. You remember that? They were arrested.
Oh, something like that. Uh-huh.
Okay. And his father, who was the king, had sort of semi-abdicated to his son, the crown prince. And it seemed like this guy was working for the good side. And I still feel he was working for the good side. But in the last Fulford report, he said that he was killed by gunshots to his head, two bullets, in April. Now, either Steele is reading Fulton or Fulton is reading him, but Steele said the same thing, that he was assassinated, and that whoever is pretending to be him is not him, that the prince is dead.
Mm-hmm.
So there are so many things happening, and yet right now it's, You almost feel like, you know, that a shoe is about to drop. Something big is about to happen. And
That's the wall of silence that he's encountering. He's asking questions and nobody's talking, so you know something is going down. When nobody's commenting, that's when the most activity is happening. It's too dangerous to comment anything.
Well, I mean, Q is gone silent as best as I can figure. I'm not hearing any new Q, call-outs. What I find really intriguing is the fact that earlier today I had to go over to my bank account, and I don't pay very much attention to it except that it's there on the page. And apparently I've lost $6,000 in stocks this last week.
Oh, wow.
So it's very real that they are mucking with the stock market. And what are they going after? The techs? Facebook? I'm heavy in Facebook, which is why that drop looks that way. But, the dark side is trying to artificially crashed the stock market to put us in an 08 recession thing. And, I mean, I don't know about the other people out there, but I'm certainly not panicking. You know, it's like, it's just smoke and mirrors.
It's just numbers in a computer, for
it's
heaven's
an,
sake.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, don't get concerned about it. Don't go selling stock off and running and screaming, oh my God, I'm going to jump out of a window.
Like that? I think I saw it once in one billboard in New York, and I don't know what other states have it. You're driving down the highway in the city, and you see this gigantic digital display with like 24 digits, and it's counting the national debt, and you see the numbers going up. And I'm like, okay, so this is just a number on a screen. It doesn't mean anything, and it'll never be settled because it's an impossible number to settle. I don't think there's enough money not on planet Earth, but not even in this galaxy, to cover such an absurd number. It's an absurd number because that's what it is. It's not meant to be settled. That's the principle of the Babylonian debt slavery. You create a debt that can never be paid off. Otherwise, what's the purpose of having it? If my slaves can pay it off, then I'm going to lose all my slaves, right? It's just plain old linear logic. You have to create a debt that will never be settled, no matter what. So it's invented. It's just numbers in a computer. That's like when this man in his presentation in San Diego, John Pizzutelli, when he explained the way that mortgages are given when a person applies for a mortgage and they give you that mortgage. He says the banking computers have a special algorithm that allows them, every bank gets a ceiling, how many numbers they can create, how much money they can create out of nothing. And they have to stay below that ceiling. So they create the numbers, and you're going to use these numbers to buy the house, but they don't create the money that you're going to use to pay it back with. That comes out of you, out of your concrete work, whatever work it is that you do. So the entire thing is fake. You really, when they give you a mortgage, you don't owe a penny to anybody. It's not real money. It's just numbers in a computer. But they sure make your life impossible if you refuse to pay it, because the whole system is geared to protect something that doesn't exist. It's just numbers in a computer. And here everybody's, you know, losing sleep over numbers in a computer. So with a stroke of a keystroke in a computer, somebody can delete that debt. It's just numbers in a computer. That's why I know that there's so much back and forth talk about cryptocurrencies and bitcoins and all of that. I'm sorry. As long as those things are numbers in a computer, they're as trustworthy as, I don't know, you know, puffs of smoke. You know, they can be wiped out in an instant, and they say, oh, no, we have this gazillion bit encryption system. It's numbers in a computer, sorry.
You know, they've made us so afraid of so many things, you know, the fear of scarcity. I have a friend who, no matter how she would like to be more optimistic, she keeps going back and saying, but there's not enough food to feed everybody. And I'm going like, of course there is. Of course there is. There's not enough land. I mean, it's like, if you look at how much land is really could be made for food, it's considerable. And if you do it right, you don't really impinge on nature. But the thing of it is that you can build skyscraper farms.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be limited to destroying the ecological environment around you. You can just build up. The ability to artificially stimulate plants through the use of shungite water.
Now you're quoting another sci-fi book.
You know, it's like there. If you can imagine it, it can happen. And if you can't imagine it, then it won't. And so they keep us frozen from using our imaginations for saying, for instance, don't talk to yourself. People will think you're crazy. Well, how the hell are you going to know what you think if you don't talk to yourself?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, jeez. And the bees, I mean, you listen to what the reaction of people when Derek starts talking about the profound difference in what is happening in his environment, just in the area around him, because the bees this year, instead of being recycled into hives and then, you know, building the hives up so you got more honey, as you would if you were a commercial type thinking person, they were allowed to go into the wild to affect the wild environment. And what happened? Well, the whole area has got more blooms, more flowers, more everything, because the bees are out there pollinating, to the point that the apple trees in particular are so overwhelmed with apples that these old, very old, big trees, the limbs are breaking. You know? So, and the people, we were talking about it on the show, and the neighbors are actually, you know, talking about it. It's not like he's going out saying, hey, did you see what my bees did? No, they're just talking about, wow, we're having such an amazing growing season, our garden. And he talked about the grapes. He's got his neighbor's grapes have gone into his yard. And so he's got these grapes in his yard. But the neighbors have grapes. And the grapes used to be very small and weren't any really no sugar in them, you know, not good at all. To the point that the local, what did he call him? Moonshiner Bob, yeah. I think he called him, wouldn't even use those grapes to make moonshine. But this year, he was just ecstatic because the grapes were two-thirds as big, full of sugar, delicious, and, you know, that's because the bees were there. So the amount of astounding results that you can have within a matter of weeks, we're not talking years, we're talking weeks. You know, it's 11 weeks, he goes from 50,000 to 1 million bees. That was last year. This year we never could get quite a count on what happened, because the a normal hive doesn't even necessarily swarm. Those hives, the four of them that were shungite hives, swarmed at least twice. You know, so in again, you know, less than 12 weeks. So, you know, the thing of it is if you can think it, it can happen. So if you think good things, it will happen. You know, let's just think of that big crowd just going like, oh, for heaven's sakes, what in the hell are we doing? We're not going to go to the edge of disaster and fight and go up against bullets, you know. They're not going to walk up there if they think there's bullets. They're getting paid for this. This is crazy. Just see them turning around and going home. None of this bullshit. See the gold piling up on the front of the White House. You know, that can buy everybody's debt off, start from zero. Let's make this the reality that Walt and I started building in 2014. Right, Walt?
Well, did you see, I don't know if you noticed, because you're so busy, Anelia has been using the Cabal's method of enlisting people's consciousness to create, but instead of creating the Cabal's reality, she's thinking of creating a reality that will benefit humanity. So she's asking everybody, take 30 seconds, take 1 minute of your day, or if you can do it 2-3 times a day, and visualize that you're already living with free energy, that your house is plugged into a system of free energy, or that you have a free generator, non-polluting generator in your bag, or whatever your imagination takes you, but just see it as done. Not that it's coming, that it's already done, that the energy you're burning in your house is free energy. So she's doing exactly that. She's enlisting people to bring together their consciousness to create something, a feature of reality that we all want and love, free energy, not get that stupid bill every month, not have to, you know, be shutting lights every 5 minutes because, oh, we're going to lower the power bill and whatnot.
Cool. Next week, let's look at that, because next week we'll be here before we know it. Happy Halloween, everybody. We're actually at the top of the hour by a minute. Walt, you want to say good night to everybody?
Good night, everybody, and thank you for your patience, and thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you again.
We'll see you again, yes. Now, following this show will be the Shungite Show with Gene Rockefeller. If you can, hang in there, listen to it. Otherwise, I'll have it up on YouTube and probably tomorrow, maybe the next day. Everybody be safe, be blessed, and we'll see you the next time we see you. Thank you for listening to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show, produced by Haggy Shack Radio and simulcast over Cosmic Reality Radio. Hello.